from the South Side and Cork and Kerry at the Park. This is our celebration of the Red Line series on the home of the White Sox, 720 WGN.
All right, welcome to Friday afternoon, a beautiful afternoon for baseball, and we're not too far away at Guaranteed Rate Field. The White Sox and the Cubs are going to start with traffic. Violetta, we had a little mishap there. What's the traffic situation look like?
Well, right now, Steve, we have stop-and-go traffic northbound Stevenson at Bluff Road. There's a rollover crash blocking both lanes. Traffic only getting by on the right shoulder only. That traffic accident was southbound lanes and now headed north. A stalled car inbound. Kennedy's blocking the center lane at Armitage. Stop-and-go between Sacramento and the interchange. 50 minutes O'Hare to downtown, 35 minutes on the flip. And the Eisenhower's 45 minutes, 390 to the old post office, a half hour back out. For personalized traffic on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app. It's approved by the mortgage experts of Team Hochberg. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago. I'm Violetta Podramedic with WGN Traffic.
All right, all the work is done. Now, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, here on 720 WGN. Tom Gimbel will be by a little bit later. Of course, Tom, the CEO of LaSalle Network, and he talks to different business issues. And one of the things here is, you know, the White Sox clearly are rebuilding and great things are coming. How do you do that when it comes to your office or your business altogether? We'll talk about rebuilding the business coming up with Tom Gimbel. Also later in the program, we'll talk White Sox and Charities. Christine O'Reilly, the VP of Community Relations and the Executive Director of White Sox Charities, will be here. And as I said with Bill and Wendy, I'm really interested in this group called the Farther Foundation. Look it up here before we talk to Dave Weindling. It was his idea, I think, and he's been at it for a number of years now. They've got a big fundraiser coming up next week, but it's a really cool thing that they do, so we'll talk to Dave in a bit. Right now, we say hello to Andrea Haynes from Blue Sky, and joins us on most Fridays to talk about what's going on in the world of tech here in Chicago. Andrea, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks, Steve. Great to be here.
Okay, I'm ordering you a drink. What would you like to have here? Because the bar's starting to hop as we get closer to the first pitch.
Oh, man. How about a Coke?
A Coke. Okay, would it be a Coke with cannabinoid in it, or would it be just your run-of-the-mill Coke?
You know, I would love to try that, and it is coming. Coca-Cola said this week that it is interested in making wellness drinks infused with CBD, which is the ingredient in marijuana that might help your pain but won't get you high.
You know, we tried to talk about this. We actually had some technical difficulty yesterday, so didn't have a real good conversation about it. But and you and I have talked about how some of the beer companies, as we see their market share shrink, are moving toward marijuana. So tell me, though, this is not the what Coke is looking at would not be something that would, well, it wouldn't take a part of the buzz share from the rest of the market, right? This isn't really about getting a buzz off a can of Coke.
Exactly. So this is more focused on sort of the wellness world, and the drink would potentially ease inflammation, pain, cramping, that kind of thing. So it would more be like a little bit medicinal. And it's interesting because that's how Coke started. You know, there's this like legend, not legend, I guess, but reality that when Coke started, it actually had cocaine in it, and it was there to ease your pain.
Right. It was it was cocaine in there. And so what does this CBD do for people who drink it that a bottle of beer or a joint or a can of regular old Coke wouldn't do?
So it would kind of take out the psychotropic part, I guess you would say. It would give you maybe the refreshment of a Coke with the, you know, maybe anti-inflammatory type, anti-pain properties.
All right. So we'll follow that. And that's having an impact on the rest of the beverage world, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. Like you mentioned, beer are very big with this. Coke, you know, with soda, just is generally not performing as well anymore as people move to other types of beverages. So it could be a big move for them.
And we're watching the businesses that actually are involved in marijuana production boomed on Wall Street. I think it was on Monday when this word first came out.
Exactly.
Let's talk now on cell phones because, you know, I am getting now more and more cell phone calls that are solicitations. It used to never happen. Now it's happening more and more. I sometimes try to block the calls. There's this one from New Jersey. I block it, and I get another call from a nearby number in New Jersey the next day. And there's this group out called First Orion that says that's going to become the norm.
Yeah, it's getting harder to block them as you clean out, and there's just been an incredible leap in the number of these calls. In 2017, our cell phones were still kind of a haven from that type of call that we might be used to at home. We were getting less than 4% of calls to your cell number, you know, were those types of spam calls. That number is up to 29% this year and will be projected 45% by early 2019. Now, so a year and a half from now, theoretically, half our cell phone calls basically will potentially be scammed.
So it's interesting because I think the way we use our cell phones, well, the way I use my cell phone is very different from the way I used to use my telephone at home. I consider a cell phone call almost like an email, whereas I don't answer it if I don't know who it is. Part of that is because I guess I use my cell phone for my travel business, so I'm not inclined to pick up everyone. I'll let it go to voicemail and get to it when I am better able to. But so I wonder if our relationship with our phones are changing so that it won't be quite as annoying.
Yeah, I do think so. I think, you know, when you first had a cell phone, it felt like only maybe a few people had that number. And so if they were calling you, you felt like you would pick up, right? It was either an emergency or someone you very definitely wanted to hear from.
I remember
you ignore a call at your home. But that has definitely changed and sounds like will change even more. Nobody will be picking up their phone anymore.
I remember
some of us are already there.
Years ago, Judy Markey called me, and I didn't say hello. I said, how did you get this number? Because no one called me on my cell phone.
Yep.
And the FCC is cracking down on this. Now, I know I'll get a phone call from my area code and my actual 3-digit exchange that is a scam. So they've got that way, too, of sort of moving in on you there and making it look like it might be your neighbor calling you when it's really not.
Yeah, that's become very popular. I've gotten calls that are within a digit of my actual phone number, which, in a way, why would you answer from your own phone number? But it creates a sense of familiarity, and you think, oh, I know that number, let me grab that.
Right.
So the FCC's, you know, trying to keep up with all this. We get, of course, tons of complaints about it. And there are call blocking apps and things like that, but those aren't perfect yet, and it just seems like the scammers are always one step ahead of whatever we're doing to kind of limit their reach to us.
I want to ask you about this Facebook story, too. It's fascinating, right? What Facebook can do for advertisers is they can target in. If you're looking for left-handed baseball players, you know, you can focus your ad to left-handed baseball players. But that becomes illegal or tricky when it comes to hiring workers, right? And there's a lawsuit against Facebook and a few employers because they were targeting, it looks like they were targeting potential employees in what is an illegal way.
Yes, exactly. So Facebook does this very highly targeted type of use. This is, you know, an advantage if you're looking for certain types of people. The problem is looking for certain types of people only can take you so far because you get into grounds where it's illegal. There's civil rights laws, there's protected, you know, classes. You can't only look for men, for example. And what they were doing here was targeting men for jobs in roles like police officers, truck drivers, sales reps at sports stores, things that, you know, they're thinking, well, we want a man for this, but or maybe a man is most likely to want this job, but you can't quite target it that way. It'd still be within the law.
If I make suits and I want to sell my men buy my suits, I can target an ad to men on the internet. But if I want to hire people to sell my suits, I can't target just men, even though they might be the people who end up working for me. I can't target them because that's illegal. I can't consider a potential employee just based on gender.
Exactly. Gender is one, race is another, you know, religion, age, all those things, disability, sexual orientation, all protected when it comes to employment. So you can't, you know, you can't kind of only make your posting available to certain groups.
Andrea Haines, read more at the Chicago Tribune. Listen, have a great weekend. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you, Steve. Have fun. You too.
It's our Redline Series rally from Cork and Kerry, 33rd and Princeton on the south side. Here, the flagship home of the Chicago White Sox, 720 WGN.
And we're broadcasting live from the Cork and Kerry at the park on the corner of 33rd and Princeton, sponsored by Virtue Cider. Saw the guys from Virtue Cider here earlier. And I got here early in the morning and had a chance to walk around Bridgeport a little bit around the neighborhood. And I just love it down here. People are so friendly, and it's just such a great sort of feeling spot. I love coming down here. Tom Gimbel is on a phone line from the LaSalle Network, the CEO, the creator, the man behind the myth, and he joins us on most Fridays. Tom, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Always good to be with you, Steve.
You know, I'm not kidding. I was talking to some of the firemen in the neighborhood, and we're just having a great time this morning. And you just get the feeling, you know, that this is a place that is going to pop, and maybe not next year, but perhaps the year after or the year after that, that things are on the move here. And I suppose there's a parallel to that when it comes to the business world, right? There are times when businesses need to regroup and rebuild.
Yeah, Steve, I agree with you 100%. You can feel a culture shift in a company, in a sports team. You felt it similarly. I know you're down at the Cell today, by the Cell, but it's really the same with the Bears, with Mitchell Trubisky and Nagy.
Yeah,
just get a feel.
Tom, we're there. I think we lost you. Well, if I can continue Tom's thoughts, because we are completely simpatico. But I think the point is, he mentioned the Bears, but we saw it in the city with the Chicago Cubs on the north side and with the Chicago Blackhawks, you know, right here on the station. They went from a franchise that was sort of in search of itself to really found itself. Tom, you back with us now?
Yeah, I'm back with you. I heard you on the Hawks and everything.
I brought
up
the Blackhawks too. Yeah, right. I mean, that's sort of what we're talking about.
Yeah, and there's no doubt about it. The interesting thing is, you see it sometimes with addition and subtraction, right? It is Crane Kenny still at the Cubs, the culture changed. John McDonough left the Cubs, went to the Hawks, that changed. Sometimes you have great people that leave an organization, and it can still have a positive impact. But there really is change for change's sake, and then there's also change that really impacts the organization culturally. And sometimes you need both.
And it's not. So we talk a lot about what happens organically or what is inorganic, and it seems to me that for the kernel of this, for the beginning of a culture change, it's got to be inorganic. You got to make something happen and then let it grow organically.
Yes. Well, it's really the definition of what leadership is. Is, are you willing to make a change, or are you waiting for something to grow unto itself? And my belief is, fundamentally, business or sports or politics or what have you, is that the leader actually has the change. They look people in the eye. They fire somebody. They bring a new manager or leader into the organization. They give them power and authority to do things. And all the instances we talked about, that's happened. And that's a real big part of the puzzle.
All right, so you're sitting in the C-suite. You're looking out over the malaise that is your office. How do you identify what you need to do, and then how do you do it?
Well, I think I've said this phrase to you before, Steve, is culture is kind of like the Supreme Court's definition of pornography. You can't really describe it, but you know it when you see it.
Work in pornography every week somehow. I don't know how that happens.
But if you're actually involved from the C-suite in your company, and you're not sitting there from 30,000 feet, but you walk the floor and you talk to the staff, you can feel it. You can see it in people's eyes. It's no different than sports. You can tell when the players are running hard on a grounder to first base, and you can tell when they're lollygagging.
Right,
you know it, you see it, you feel it. You got to be in touch.
Tom Gimbel, the CEO of LaSalle Network, looks like we lost him again, but we're about wrapping up. Tom, if you're there, thanks very much. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you again on Friday. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Live from the South Side in Cork and Kerry at the Park, this is our celebration of the Red Line Series on the home of the White Sox, 720 WGN.
And welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, right here on 720 WGN. The crowd is starting to grow here at the Cork and Kerry, the broadcast live from the bar, the Cork and Kerry at the Park, the place to go before and after the game, sponsored by Goose Island Brewing Company, and we certainly thank them for that. Okay, on the phone line now is Christine O'Reilly. She's the Vice President of Community Relations and the Executive Director of White Sox Charities. And Christine, welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks. Happy to be on the phone with you today.
Yeah, you know, I think we talked the first, when we were out here for opening day, was the first time we had a chance to talk. And so that was at the start of the season. As you look back now, how has the season gone when it comes to White Sox Charities?
You know, we're so fortunate, despite, you know, the fact that the fans might be a little bit disappointed about the standings at the end of the season. I think the excitement about the team and and kind of the rebuild and the energy and the fun that you see the players having on a day-to-day basis is really something that's captured by our fans, and they continue to be so amazingly generous over the course of the year. You know, we're so fortunate because our ability to make an impact through White Sox Charities is really powered by our fans. They're just so supportive and so generous.
I want to talk about some of the different programs that you do, some of the ones we touched on earlier, but let's start with this Amateur City Elite, where you you identify kids who might need a leg up, who are athletes, and give them a chance at not just baseball, but a college education. Explain that for me.
Yeah, you know, we're 10 years plus into our program, the Amateur City Elite program. We call it our ACE program. And about 10 years ago, we realized that there was real baseball talent in high schools across the city, but nobody was coming to look at them. College coaches weren't coming, scouts weren't coming. So we knew that there were kids that had talent, but they just weren't able to get the look, as they call it.
Right, right.
So we created, essentially, a travel baseball program for these kids, inner city kids who have baseball talent, and we just created this travel program to take them to high level tournaments all over the area and all over the country, just to expose them to, you know, what their talents should be exposing them to. Coupled with the fact that we're really focused on academics. Academics is really important too, so we're using baseball and really giving these kids an opportunity to really make, you know, great strides in planning for their future.
And, you know, it's interesting because coming up, the next guest on the show has a foundation where what they do is they take, I'll use the term underprivileged kids, I'm not sure that's the right term, but and they send them overseas. They give them sort of overseas trips to provide different perspectives, to open their eyes to things they would never have had a chance to do otherwise. It seems like that's sort of what the ACE program does for these kids that you're talking about.
It sure is. You know, in the beginning, it was an opportunity to expose them to going to, you know, different areas, different regions, different states even, to participate in tournaments. But I think what is so amazing is it's also opened the kids' eyes to understanding what they have to do for themselves in terms of academics and really applying themselves to being students first, because that puts them in the best position to get the best offers from the best schools. So it's been really interesting to see the kids really accept the fact that, you know, they've got to have their on-field development coupled with their academic development. And I think that's one of the beauties of our program and why we have so many other teams reaching out to us to really delve into our ACE program and see what we do. You know, we've had kids, countless numbers of kids go to college on baseball scholarships. We've had kids drafted by Major League Baseball. So we really feel like it's a model program. We're so proud of our kids and our coaches. And it's, again, that fan support that allows us to invest what it takes to run this travel baseball program and offer these kids these opportunities.
Well, and it's not a player development program. It's an education program, it sounds like.
Yeah, it really, well, you know, it's a
maybe
human
both?
Development program,
yeah.
Right? Because it's about character development and academics, and you know, they'll be able to go as far as their talents will take them, but we're giving them all these wraparound skills too that'll really serve them well throughout their lives.
How are you unique to Major League Baseball, or how many other teams are doing this? You said some others are reaching out to you.
You know, quite a few, almost every team that I know of has some sort of a youth baseball development program. You know, it's incumbent upon every major league team to make sure they're doing everything they can to, you know, kind of reinforce the love of the game and getting kids to participate in the game. I believe that the White Sox ACE program is really unique. You know, we've got 10 teams and these kids participating from 12U through 17U. I do think ours is probably the most highly evolved program. And we do have so many other clubs that reach out to us just to try to understand our model with the hopes of replicating some semblance of it in their own market.
All right, the White Sox Volunteer Week, I think, was in June.
Yeah.
How was that?
That's amazing. You know, it's such a cool opportunity that we have. We take 1 week, we call it Sox Serve Week, and we just really use that week to showcase all the different community engagement programs that we participate in that include so many of the club, you know, all the guys in the clubhouse. We had 100% participation of our players.
Wow, that's great.
Wives were supportive. So we do an outreach event every day of the week. And then every night, in conjunction with the game, we have different unique fundraising opportunities. So an opportunity to really touch people in their hearts and homes through the outreach, and then creating some fun fundraising activities, which drives revenue for White Sox charities, but also gives fans really cool and exciting events that they can take a part of.
All right, so we're winding down for the season. Is the off-season quiet for you, or what kind of things come up in the off-season?
You know, about 3 days ago, we had a full day 2019 planning meeting. Budgets are in for next year. You know, we don't really rest on our laurels. It's really, you know, I think the excitement about this club and the direction that the Chicago White Sox are headed in terms of the on-field, kind of the baseball operations things, really breathes so much excitement into every department across the organization. Community relations and White Sox charities is certainly a part of that. So we're really looking forward to creating opportunities and enhancing the things that we do that continues to engage our fans, because we realize that they, as I said at the beginning of this interview, you know, they are, everything that we're able to do is really powered by our fans. So we're really excited about making sure that everything that we put out there is going to engage them and really kind of feed their excitement about the overall organization.
Christine O'Reilly, the Executive Director of Chicago White Sox Charities. Great to talk to you. I can't wait for the next time, Christine.
You too. Enjoy the rest of the day.
Oh, it's beautiful out here. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
It's the Red Line Series, North versus South, and we're live from Cork and Kerry at the park on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank, here on 720 WGN. All right, on the phone line now is David Weidling, who is the president of the Farther Foundation. And I mentioned earlier that I've known David for 30 years, but I don't know if I've talked to him in the past 28. David, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you, Steve. It's a pleasure to be on the air with you, and it has been too long. The
it's
connection
kind of funny.
To our mutual friend has lingered for a while.
Yeah, and our mutual friend is Rob Henson, who I told today you were going to be on with me, and he said to say hello. I don't want to eat up too much of our time doing that. Tell me about the Farther Foundation, because you know we've emailed. I have a travel company. I think it's so valuable, whether you're 6, 16, or 65, to see new cultures and see how different people live. But it's especially so when you are maybe deprived of a lot of experiences the rest of us have, and when you are in your formative years. And that's where the Farther Foundation comes in.
Right, Steve. You said it very well. And as I said, with your travel company, you know that it is the truth. And so what we try to do is work with high school students in and around Chicago who come from low-income communities, seldom have the opportunity to leave their neighborhood, let alone the state
right.
or the country. And we give them opportunities to travel across the country or around the world and participate in programs where they're immersed in new cultures, they develop skills, they provide community service, they cultivate their own leadership potential, and attain personal growth so that they're more confident and more prepared when they're looking to make that next step
That, I suppose, would give them not just the confidence, but just the wherewithal to see that there are other opportunities to help them succeed, right? How do you find these? How do you identify the kids who go?
Well, we form partnerships with many schools and other student support organizations in the city, organizations that provide tutoring and mentoring after school programs and college prep, because it really takes more than just this travel opportunity. It takes a whole a bunch of supports to make these students ready to overcome barriers and lack of opportunity that they've had previous in their life. So we are looking at these students recommended to us by organizations that are giving them additional support.
And then, Dave,
terrific students recommended to us.
What is a trip like? I mean, are they gone for a week, 2 weeks, 6 weeks? What's a typical trip like?
Well, we have a lot of different types of programs that our students participate on. They're almost all a minimum of 2 weeks. They'll go as long as 6 or 7 weeks.
Okay.
Many of them go out of the country. Where they'll do language learning. They'll do service programs. Some are the outdoor adventure types that people might have heard of, where you do some rock climbing or rafting. And some students just stay within the country, and they go to college campuses where they spend a few weeks on a college campus with students from all over the country and the world and get to experience what it's like to be at a college campus and do college-level work.
These kids have had a chance to travel to 31 different countries, 25 different states. And how many kids total have benefited from this program?
We've had 220 students, more than $500,000 in grants that we've awarded over the years. This past summer, just completed, we've had 40 students travel to a bunch of countries, a bunch of college campuses, and really have unique experiences that they're starting to report back to us about in photos and essays that we get from the students, where we really get to learn about their experiences and what they've learned.
It must be so fulfilling for you to see these kids come back with their eyes opened in a different direction, I guess is one way to put it. You mentioned grants, and obviously to fund these trips, you need to rely on grants from companies or from people, and also from donations, right? You've got a big fundraiser coming up.
We do. We do an annual fundraiser that features a story slam. We have some featured storytellers, people from our community, people with a modest level of fame sometimes, who come out to tell stories because we feel that these students are living out a new story in their life. So storytelling is an entertaining way to relate to our program. And so it's an entertaining evening as well as one where we're looking to raise money. It happens Thursday, October 11th, 7 o'clock. It's at Fitzgerald's Nightclub out in Berwyn. And we certainly invite anyone who wants to come to go to our website to learn more about it. We're at fartherfoundation.org, where they can learn more about our organization and the event. Buy tickets to the event, see about our speakers.
Not further, not farther, it's farther, F-A-R-T-H-E-R, foundation.org. Dave, let's do this again when we have more time to talk. Good luck next week, and I can't wait to hear about it.
Great. Thanks so much for your time, Steve.
Dave Weiling, the Farther Foundation. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.